Thank you so much for having me here today. It's an absolute honor. Perimeter has long been a partner with Street Grace. We have done a lot of the policy work together over the years. I'm working closely with Polly now, and it's just really, I'm really grateful to be here. And I want to start with a short video. I want us to hear from some survivors first so we can kind of wrap our brain around the scope of the problem here and what it looks like here.
The first time
Are we going to be able to get the audio on, or should we skip this?
The first time I was sold for...
Amen. We'll see if we get that. Anyway. It's on? I thought it was on my computer. Let's go again.
The first time I was sold for sex, I was taken to a big house. Other girls are sitting there crying, and you could hear girls screaming upstairs. And I mean, I kind of had an idea at that point that I was going to get hurt. I did nothing to deserve this. At 4.5 years old, I was lured from our front yard by a neighbor in our community. We were held there overnight where we were sexually and mentally abused. I thought that my neighbors were like my protectors. My community wasn't safe anymore to me, period.
Every year, up to 3,600 kids are sold for sex in the state of Georgia. But that's just a number on a piece of paper. It's easily thrown away. It's easily written off as a statistic, and it doesn't really affect us that much. Many times you hear the statement, that number can't be real, but it is. And we're going to show you in a way that's too big for us to continue to ignore.
Things were looking pretty good this morning on 85 southbound, but now we're seeing a delay.
Now, this is Chopper 46 video of a caravan of school buses. The group that put this on, called Street Grace, came together to speak out against this awful practice.
Human trafficking is a here problem. Wherever here is for you, the majority of sex trafficking that occurs is our children who are being bought and sold by members of our community. We can stop it.
It does not have to happen to any child.
My wife and I have 2 daughters, and I just cannot imagine this happening to them. And if it was happening to them, I would just hope somebody would step up and help.
Human trafficking is the fastest growing, second largest illegal business on the planet. The 72 yellow school buses that are assembled here today, each representing 50 of Georgia's children, are a difficult reminder that these statistics represent lives.
I hate that my city is associated with such a horrible crime.
I feel like too many people just bypass things when they can really actually do something to help.
We remain committed to preventing any child from ending up in such a horrific nightmare and to rescuing those who may already be involved.
I hope that this opens people's eyes. When they see those numbers going by on the buses, they think of the kids in their lives.
I'm here to tell you, it is a long road to recovery, and no child deserves to have to experience something like this.
It is a very hard topic to talk about. If you do not have this conversation with your children, somebody else is.
It's a significant event in the life of Atlanta to be able to rise up, one city, one voice, one cause. You just have to be willing to step into the conversation, engage with kids.
Kids need to know that they can say no, that they have boundaries, and they need to feel like they're going to be believed if something does happen. Because if they have nobody to go to, they're not going to say anything.
When we're talking about one of our most vulnerable populations, children, we don't have just a legal obligation. We have a moral obligation as well.
Nobody was there for me. That's why I left my voice, to make sure that we keep our children safe.
Doing what I do now and being able to help others is the only thing that makes my story worth it. Don't sit back and do nothing because you feel like the problem is too big and you can't make enough of a difference. because you can.
Thank you. So that was an event that we did a couple of years ago. I said this here, I'm good. talking about the scope of the problem, 72 school buses worth of children exploited in the metro Atlanta area every year. These two survivors talked about how it was somebody they trusted, a neighbor, a close family friend, that lured them into a trafficking situation. At Street Grace, our mission is to eradicate the commercial sexual exploitation of children. We want to see a world where children are free from sexual exploitation. And we look at this problem through three lenses. So we are first and foremost Christ-centered. We believe Christ wants to redeem and restore the world. We believe in justice. We believe in mercy. And it does affect how we operate because we do believe God's perfect plan will be ultimately to have both the exploited and the exploiter forgiven and restored. We are child-focused. So while all of the work we do applies to adults as well, we do focus on children and on protecting children because the great majority of those who are trafficked are first trafficked between the ages of 12 and 14, 11 and 15. And then demand-centric, we focus on the demand, the buyers that fuel trafficking. I was just last night kind of in my go-to-bed, check-a-few-news sites, saw an article on WSB where a husband of one of our federal judges, brother-in-law of one of our governor candidates twice, was just charged with trafficking, not for selling, but for buying. Those who purchase children, in this case a teenager for sex, are traffickers just the same as those who sell them. And for a very long time, everybody understands that seller trafficker, the one controlling the child, is a trafficker. And most of our efforts and our prosecutions were focused on that. But we have to recognize it is that demand that fuels trafficking. And for too long, that demand, those who are purchasing for an hour, for a night, we called them Johns. Way too nice of a word to use for somebody who exploits children. But also just, it was this idea like this is not like not a really, just an anonymous non-entity, not the demand is what fuels the trafficking, the selling, the supply of our vulnerable. We also do our work on four pillars. So prevention, protection, policy, and pursuit. And I'm glad so many of you have seen Voices of Freedom. It does portray a lot of, it's hard to watch. Trafficking does look different here, but it is just as horrific. One of our subject matter experts, who's also a survivor leader, when she saw, like, it really, the horror of it really rang true. As a former prosecutor, so somebody who worked really closely with law enforcement, the part of it that rings the most true is this part in the beginning where you see how working these cases is crushing the soul of that law enforcement officer, of those officers. Pray for your law enforcement officers. It is very hard to deal with seeing this day after day. It's actually why I'm at Street Grace. So as a prosecutor, every case I encountered involved a child who had already been exploited. When I give examples, there's actually always a face and a name in my mind. And you can see how long it can take that recovery. Yes, God can fully redeem and restore, but it doesn't actually make it as if it didn't happen. I'm guessing statistically, we have all been through some great grief, great loss. 7 years ago, I lost my husband in a carjacking. God has redeemed, God has restored, God has healed, but he doesn't make it as if it didn't happen. It's why I think it is so important that at Street Grace, we focus on prevention. We don't focus on rescuing the other, that poor, vulnerable kid. We do services for survivors and those who have experienced. But our focus is stopping trafficking before it happens. Because if you think of a trafficking victim as an other, you might be okay to get to go be the rescue and the hero. You know, we have the savior complex that sometimes crops up, not recognizing there is one savior, and we are not that person. No, if we recognize that this is a person, each child made in the image of God. Bob, I really appreciate what you shared about children and coming to God as little children. If it was our own child, we would never be okay with, oh, we'll just focus on rescuing these kids who are trafficked. No, we would work to prevent. So prevention is just really key to my heart. Protection, we do have a 24/7 hotline number where we do direct services. We do assessments, direct services, case management for survivors by licensed social workers, making sure they get all of their needs and can begin that healing recovery journey. It's a several-year program. We do a lot of policy and legislation, both making sure that our bad guys can get caught, but also making sure our survivors can recover, and also making sure our laws are so that law enforcement can intervene. You don't have to wait until a child is harmed, but in Georgia, if you attempt to purchase a kid, but you're really talking to a law enforcement officer, you can be prosecuted the same way. And then pursuit. We have a artificial intelligence bot, a technology platform that was created by BBDO and is being strengthened by programmers at Microsoft that can be used both for research, both also for deterrence, and also for law enforcement. Again, when somebody's attempting to purchase a kid, intervening before that child gets contacted. Let's make sure we understand what human trafficking is. Broadly, human trafficking is labor and sex trafficking. Labor is any type of work compelled by force, fraud, or coercion, so against the free will. Sex trafficking is commercial sex compelled by, when you're dealing with an adult, 18 or older, we show force, fraud, or coercion. Kidnapping is almost never involved. Think about it. If you can find a vulnerable person and you can exploit their fear of homelessness, of shame, why would you go and kidnap somebody which has such higher risk? So usually it's that coercion or that deception. But when you're dealing with a child, children cannot consent to commercial sex. So we often talk about the commercial sexual exploitation of children, child sex trafficking. I'll use the term CSEC a lot. Anytime there's sexual activity for which something of value is given or promised. It could be money, food, clothing. You are taking advantage of the vulnerability of a child. So, and it makes sense if you think about it. Children cannot consent to commercial sex. They can't also enter, they can't enter an enforceable contract. They can't rent a hotel room. They can't rent a car. They can't buy a car. A child cannot consent to a commercial sexual arrangement. So anyone who buys or sells that child is a trafficker. Now, a little bit about our numbers internationally. 2014 was estimated to be a $150 billion industry, $99 billion of which was produced from sex trafficking. One of the reasons this number is so high, it's so lucrative, is that they think it's easy to hide. If you're driving in a car and you get pulled over by the cops and there's a, you know, a girl in your car, I mean, if I got pulled over, there would be one in my car today. You get pulled over by the cops and there are drugs in your car, a dog's going to alert, you're going to get caught. Also, when you sell those drugs, you can sell them one time. But you can sell that young person, that vulnerable person, 5-10 times a night. In 2021, NCMEC received 17,000 reports of child sex trafficking. That's the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Used to be on the milk cartons. They do a lot of work around hotline numbers and trafficking and assessments, getting valuable information for prosecutors. And then 64% of those who trafficked are exploited within their country of residence. And when you're talking about big countries, it is almost, that number is so much higher. Most people are trafficked within their country of residence here. Very high percentage. So But just in the Atlanta area, the underground commercial sex economy in Atlanta is estimated to produce $290 million annually. Language is so important. For too long, we would call these victims, we call it criminalizing victimhood. They're just teen prostitute. And that implies, you know, some kind of conscious choice, bad kid. No, that's why we really careful to make sure language, and this is more of a problem, yes, in law enforcement or places who've dealt with this issue for longer. But when you use terms like C-sec victim or survivor, recognizing that they are not developmentally able to make a choice, a young person who deserves intensive support and services or a form of child abuse, recognizing that this child has been used and manipulated for another's benefit. And I tend to talk about girls and say girls, but actually, when studies have shown that up to 44% of C-sec victims are boys, when boys are victimized, I'll say this, when I say more likely, that means there's tons of exceptions, but boys are more likely to be trafficked to meet their basic needs, food, clothing, shelter. Girls are more likely to be trafficked to meet their just as real emotional needs, love, safety, security. I want to talk about some of the vulnerabilities, and this is what is so insidious about trafficking, is they look for the vulnerable. And I won't go through all of these statistics, but homeless and abandoned, marginalized, foster care, history and foster care system is a leading risk factor for CSEC. One in five foster children report being given something of value in exchange for sex, so being trafficked. Now, whether to the extent to which, and we're working a lot of policies around the foster care system right now, whether or not that it's the extent to which is the foster care system itself that is the vulnerability, or the things that happen in the child's life that led them to being involved in the foster care system, it is a huge, huge risk. Previously sexually abused, many adult survivors of trafficking, 71%, report a history of child sexual abuse. The average age was 8 years old. So what somebody is exploiting is, at an early age, somebody taught, almost always it's a family member or a very close friend. It's not a stranger. So somebody early in that child's life taught them to connect those two things, safety, love, and their body. Truancy. This actually, more than one-third of those who are trafficked have a history of truancy. Do you know that really means two-thirds of those who are trafficked have no history of truancy? They are still in our schools while they're being trafficked. They're actually very often by their traffickers sent back into the schools to recruit their friends. They're sent in with money. They're sent in with a new purse and a new bag and a new shoes. And they're told by, very manipulative, taught by the trafficker, and every trafficker has his own game. But several will say, I've heard some, you know, like, don't go after the cheerleader, don't go after the 10. She's got all the confidence she needs. She is not going to fall for this. Don't go after the 1. I can't sell her for enough. Go after the 5. Find somebody who's being bullied, ostracized, picked on. Let's make her part of our friends. Let's make her a friend. Let's make her part of our family. We can exploit her. Substance abuse, it can be both a predictor and an outcome. So a child who has a substance abuse issue already, traffickers can prey on that person thinking, I'm going to be able to control them longer. But they also often introduce substances so they can control and sell that child for a longer period of time. Runaway, 1 in 6 runaways has been victimized by trafficking. And then technology, you know, the same technology that we eventually got to work on the video. 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 5 boys report unwanted online sexual solicitation. 1 in 3 girls says, somebody asked me for a nude picture of myself. And that's one of the keys. So now that I'm the mother of an 8-year-old, it's our Keeping Kids Safe in the Digital Age training for parents and grandparents. Because what kids are starting to normalize, this is what happens to them, their friends all the time. Parents are still afraid to talk to their kids about because we don't want to give them this idea. But this is really how trafficking has changed the most in the last decade. So when I was first prosecuting in Fulton County for several years, almost all of my cases involved somebody who had run away from some type of abuse at home. The first case, it was their stepfather. It was every night that the mom would go work her CNA job at the hospital. For her, that first night, study said within 48 hours, somebody came up to her and said, basically, you've got one thing of value you can sell and I can help you do it. Most traffickers are not that upfront. They figure out what she needs. Does she need a father figure or does she need a boyfriend figure? So am I going to promise to keep her safe and take her back to my room? Or am I going to tell her how pretty she is and tell her she can come back to my room and hang out and we can eat something? And then maybe that first night, but maybe 3 weeks later, is, hey, I don't have the money to pay for this, but you can, I don't have the money to pay for the room tonight, but hey, you can help us get out of here. You've got something value. Don't worry, I'll keep you safe. I'll make sure nothing bad happens. And it used to be, and sent them out on the street to be bought over and over again. But at all of my last cases, when I was prosecuting for Attorney General Owens and Attorney General Carr, traffickers met their victims online, which really has made a much broader range of our children vulnerable. There was a trafficker, and he was arrested for a rape, and law enforcement's looking through his cell phone. They see signs he may have been trafficking, so they sent it over to my unit. And this guy would basically send messages to some 50-odd people a day on Facebook, and he had a type. Every trafficker has a different plan. They're very purposeful. He was looking for somebody who was, be a girl, look between 17 and 19 in a tank top, and had a kid with him. And he'd just scroll through. I mean, he just would, and send massive amounts of these. Hey, your child is beautiful just like their mother. I know it's crazy to talk out of the blue, but you never know when there could be a spark. If somebody responded at all from an actual sentence to, you know, a thumbs up, he would send a picture of a fistful of cash and say, I just sold my car for $5,000. I want to go out and celebrate. I'd love to take you to the mall. You know, in months of doing this. So thousands of people. Nobody said, yes, stranger, I want to go to the mall. But who responded was somebody who was facing a vulnerability at that moment. So my mom just lost her job. We don't know how we're going to pay our rent. We're working really hard to get our power turned back on. Maybe you could help with that. I just found out I'm pregnant. I know my dad or my boyfriend, someone's going to be mad. I'm going to get kicked out. I need help. So now traffickers cast a broad net and they find somebody who's vulnerable at the time. They use, mentioned seduction. They use peer relationships, talked about that. Sending kids who are being trafficked. Say maybe you think this guy's your boyfriend. You send him inappropriate pictures. Now he sends you, maybe he's already sold you a couple of times. And he sends you back into school and tells you to recruit some of your friends to join your group, to prove that you love me, to prove your loyalty. Oh, and if you don't, I'll talk to your sister. If you don't, I'll show these pictures to everyone. Another key vulnerability is parents exploiting children. The first case that came to my former boss, Sam Olin's attention was in Oconee County. This doesn't just happen in the metro area. It happens in rural Georgia too. Oconee Circuit, Dodge County, where a girl was being sold by her parents for monthly to the used car dealer in exchange for payments on the Dodge Caravan minivan. And then social media enticement. Some will look for maybe posts on social media about being mad. My mom just grounded me again. She sucks. She's so unfair. She doesn't understand me. And then you step in and be like, oh my gosh, your mom's so unreasonable. I can't believe that happened. Why doesn't she just stop and listen to you? Step in and be that person, that voice. That's what the trafficker does. Posts where youth are telling where they're going. Sometimes now with technology, youth can be exploited by somebody who's living on the other side of the world. But he might say, been talking, and he tells her, you know, you're at the football game. Hey, I want you to go behind the bleachers or in the room, and I want you to take in the bathroom and take these pictures for me. She doesn't want to. He says, oh, no, you have to. I'm watching you. You're there in that purple sweatshirt. I just saw your sister with the red shirt and the bow in her hair. If you don't, I'll go talk to your sister. So this girl doesn't realize, oh, yeah, my friend just posted that picture of us at the football game and tagged me at the football game. She doesn't know this person could be anywhere in the world. It's actually what is happening so much with our boys and leading to multiple suicides, even in the metro Atlanta area, where they are meeting somebody on a gaming app or on Snapchat who they think is a girl their age. They are being talked into sending photos, and then they're basically being told, hey, you just sent this to I'm an old man, you just sent them to me, and if you don't send me $1,000, I'm going to post these, I'm going to put these online, I'm going to send them to your friends, I'm going to send them to the college recruiter that's trying to recruit you for football. All of these things have actually happened here. And these boys who thought they sent these pictures to another girl sadly are not always finding an adult to tell and not coming up with $1,000. And almost every single one of these is coming. It's the next Nigerian prince scam. They're based in Nigeria and the Ivory Coast. It's not people here. They're not posting. But it is scaring our young men, particularly because it's not something they have some feel that they have somebody they can talk to about it. And again, that goes right into that bullied. There are websites that are basically for bullying. Whisper is one of them. Now get on there and like prop up the person who's being, oh my gosh, I'm the only one. I see your true worth. I see your true value. So some of the warning signs. Being with a significantly older boyfriend or girlfriend. Chronic runaway. They keep running. Children don't just run. They're either running from something, some type of abuse, or to something. Homelessness. And especially marked tattoos, brandings. There was a trafficker who, if this girl earned her quota, she could get this tattoo that she had designed. It was all like unicorns and rainbows. And she got it. And then they showed her in a mirror what it was, and it just basically said cash only on her back. This is why we work with multiple nonprofits to be able to get things like that removed. New material goods. Sudden change in appearance or behavior. You know, suddenly they've got their hair and their shoes, and there's been no change in family circumstance to where they should be able to afford that. Explicitly sexual online presence. Sadly, in our culture, more and more kids are normalizing that, which means more and more kids are becoming vulnerable. STIs, history in the commercial sex, family history, history of sexual assault and substance abuse. So I'm going to move a little bit into what we are doing. Perimeter has long been a very important part. Street Grace was created 15 years ago when a bunch of churches gathered together. Basically, then Mayor Shirley Franklin called the pastor of North Avenue Press and said, hey, I've got two big problems. I want you to take one off my hands. I have an aging and decrepit sewer system. And I have a human trafficking. And by the way, it's happening on that back corner of your church lot downtown, you know, near the Fox. Several churches, Perimeter Victory, came 12 Stone, North Avenue, had fledgling human trafficking groups, came together, decided to pour their efforts into one organization. And that is how Street Grace was created. And again, I've told you the prevention part is so important to me. The Youth Education Initiative, where we're talking directly to youth, and our new Youth Leadership Academy is absolutely one of my favorite. Empowering youth to be the next generation of leaders, because if you feel that you are empowered to protect your friends from trafficking, to know when to keep, when not to keep a secret, how not to keep a secret, how to identify a trusted adult, how to start these conversations. If you can protect your friends, then you are more empowered and less vulnerable when somebody's trying to exploit you, when somebody reaches out and starts to recruit and lure you. Help Locker, an online program meeting kids where they are, redeeming technology. And we do a lot of faith outreaches that include street teams where churches go out in the name of that church, of that local church, to a vulnerable area, very often an extended stay hotel, and just begin to build relationships. And Street Grace does that training, but we don't need them to be connected to Street Grace. We need the vulnerable to be connected to their local churches. City and municipal community trainings, business trainings, and law enforcement trainings. Of course, that's one that's also very close to my heart. The Youth Leadership Academy, like I said, it facilitates the development of the next generation of leaders, providing a foundation for a peer-to-peer education. And we do this directly in the schools. Actually, we have a program that we're doing with students and parents and youth, I think in January, here at Perimeter. But we're also doing it in the public schools, as well as in the Christian schools, as well as in the churches. And then protection. So we do have a 24-hour statewide hotline. Actually, we've now extended into Tennessee. The hotline covers both states. Doing client assessments. So when we find out, hey, I think this child may be being exploited, doing an assessment, determining both their needs and their victim status. Have they been trafficked yet, or are they just at risk? Making sure we can get them into the right program where we actually work with those who have been trafficked, doing care coordination and making sure it's an ongoing evidence-based seeking safety curriculum that takes about a year and a half to 2 years, walking them through with their case managers. Just some hot. Now, here's always like the, what do I do if I see it? Yes, there are hotline numbers. There's a national hotline number. If something is happening right in front of you, the only way to immediately get to local law enforcement is 911. If the national hotline numbers, NCMEC, for example, can be great if you see something online and you want to report it to somebody who will do an analysis and figure out where in the country it's happening and get it to the right law enforcement. The National Human Trafficking Hotline number is great for adult survivors, particularly adult survivors who do have to choose, like, when they want to get out. We cannot force an adult out of a situation. And if they're being moved around the state to state, they know one place they can call no matter where they are when they are at a place in their life where they want to get out. But then we also have our hotline number. If there's a child in your life that you are concerned about, maybe it's not, we need to get 911 and police to show up at my house right now, but we need somebody to figure out what is going on and doing an assessment. We work with DFACS calls us, schools call us, parents call us. You can use our hotline number for that. So we do our policy initiatives. Every February, we go down to the Capitol and have Advocacy Day. We used to call it Lobby Day. Advocacy Day is better for tax purposes. So we call it Advocacy Day now, where and a bunch of people, and for many years, pre-COVID, and I think it'll happen again this year, we've actually had a bus leave from Perimeter taking people to the Capitol so they didn't have to go figure out where to park down there. And we teach people, you know, what is happening in the legislature this year, what are we trying to get passed this year, but also the how to determine who your legislator is, how to find their office. You know, there's two buildings, different numbering systems. But when you go down, when you speak up, you are speaking for thousands of people because so few constituents ever actually reach out to their legislator. So if you send an email, that's probably the easiest low-hanging fruit. It's still like you're speaking for 1,000 other people. Your voice is amplified. If you write a letter or make a phone call, even more. And if you actually go down to the Capitol, you might as well be speaking for 10. They assume there are 10,000 people behind you because that is how few of their constituents actually make it down to the Capitol, not too far for us, and speak. We also do the Street Race Justice Project. So all of our legislation, I'll move on to this, is led by our Survivor Advisory Council. All of our work is actually led by survivor leaders, those with lived expertise. Because for too long, we've seen people taking advantage and re-exploiting survivors for their story, whether it's for a fundraising event or you'll have a panel, and the only person on that panel not being paid, not there as part of their job, but actually asked to tell their personal story, is the survivor. Something we're really careful not to let happen. But it used to happen with policy too. Some policy person would get an idea, they'd write it into law, or they'd write it into a bill, and they'd get it they'd want to get it passed, and you know, maybe the day before it's getting ready to be heard in a committee, we'd get a phone call. Hey, do you have a survivor who can come tell their story? Can we exploit a survivor's story and tragedy to move hearts and minds for our own policy agenda? So one of the biggest, strongest parts of Georgia law right now is our vacature and expungement for human trafficking survivors specifically. And that was led, survivors said, this is the law we need the most. 91% of survivors who are still being trafficked into their adulthood have a criminal record, the majority of which was a direct result of their trafficking. Over 60% were also arrested as children. And that will hold them back. There have been children, adults who have gone through therapeutic placements, 2 years, gone through job training specifically as for trafficking survivors, been placed in an internship, particularly for trafficking survivors, done so well in that internship that they've been offered jobs. In one case, it was a job with another company who was seeing them work. So they quit their first job. And on the day they were supposed to start, one the day before, basically they get a call from HR that says, oops, nope, you have a criminal record. One that was known when they started this internship, and that offer was withdrawn. So we work at the Street Race Justice Project. We train attorneys, big firms, solo practitioners to represent these survivors in these vacature motions. And it really can be life-changing. Think of the vulnerability. You have recovered, you have been restored. You are going on, you're trying to get a job, and your prostitution arrest pops up. You try to go get a job, and you try to get housing, and your landlord knows this is on your record. Think about that vulnerability. It's really been restoring true justice for these survivors. So finally, pursuit. And I do think Bob is going to finally be able to join you guys. He was very upset, but he is stuck in Texas, that he couldn't be here. But all the better for me. So he will definitely talk about Transaction Intercept a little more than I will. But basically, this is a highly intelligent form of technology that one of our partners, Microsoft, and their programmers have been working on, basically launching the 3.0 version. But how it started, or I think one of the key things to remember, and it kind of brings it back to this, why being Christ-centered matters. It can be used three ways. First of all, when somebody's attempting to purchase the child and they have this conversation and an agreement has been made and they think they're talking to a child, but they're really not. First thing it sends is this like scare you warning message. Can we deter you by scaring you? Hey, everything you've said has been recorded, made available to law enforcement. You could be facing 25 to 50 years of life. And then total different bot, total different number, at a scientifically researched period of time, sends an offer of help. Just need help. Not, don't know that it's attached to that thing that just happened, that scare you just had. Suicide, depression, sex addiction, substance abuse. There is a remarkably high click-through rate, not just from this thing, and I don't click them when bots send me things, not just to a page, but then to one of those services where, of course, we stop tracking. Because we want to protect a child anyway, and if we can do it best of all by helping the heart of the person who would be reaching out to exploit, we'll go there. And then really most of what the 3.0, that's what's been happening, the 3.0 bigger transaction intercept, Gracie, is used directly by law enforcement. So if you're still going to do that and then you're going to show up, have this conversation, and then you're going to show up and try to purchase this child, think you're meeting a child, then law enforcement really strengthens their ability, broadens their ability to do these operations. So that's crazy. So I would love to answer some questions. If anybody, yes, ma'am, you're first, you're next. yes. Oh, you need a microphone. There is this one. This one?
I'll talk real loud.
Okay, I'll repeat your question, and then we'll go from there.
There we go.
Thank you. Am I on?
Yes.
Yeah. Two quick ones. Are you working with Wellspring in the rehab, and how is that working? And also, what other groups do you work with sending the children for rehab?
So there are many. So this is for children when they are recovered, if they need a placement, if home is not the best place for them. There's House of Hope. House of Cherith also just have opened their kids' home in this area. Wellspring has one on the west side of town. In this area, Devereaux is about to open a receiving center. And there's also Gigi's House. Those are the ones specifically for trafficked youth. Some children actually do better in a more generic one or even in a foster care placement where they won't be recruited and urged to run again by other kids who've been trafficked. But yes, they're definitely one of our residential placement partners.
Yes, several years ago, I heard that Atlanta is the sex trafficking capital of the United States. Is that still true? And the second question is that then what is the legislature is doing to suppress the demand? Because it's all supply and demand issue.
It is.
And as long as there is no demand, there's not going to be supply. So what is the legal policy action is being taken to reduce the demand?
So that is actually a fantastic question. Thanks for setting me up for that. One of the biggest policy... So, Georgia, we have two-year sessions. We're in the middle of, in January, we will start the second year. So we have legislation that would make all purchasing a felony. So far, Texas is the only state who's done that. Georgia, we've been able to get it to their second purchase being a felony. Because basically, for a misdemeanor, it means nothing to these people. So it will be, it made it through the Senate bill. It made it through the Senate. It made it through the House committee. It was about to get voted on in the last day. And they wrapped up early last session. They did not vote on so many things that were on the table. But basically, it is only needs to now get through the House to pass. Very important legislation led by Senator Robertson, who is a former law enforcement. So we will, a lot of our focus will be on that. Now, as far as Atlanta being the number one place, so I went to University of Amsterdam because I was interested in fighting trafficking and I thought it was an international problem. While I was there, I started learning about all the things that were happening in Atlanta. And I'm from Western North Carolina, so this is our closest big city. So that's why I moved here in perfect timing where Fulton County got a grant to have its first human trafficking prosecutorial unit. So that's where I was and what I started. Atlanta was never, we hear Atlanta's number one. Atlanta was first alphabetically in 2006 when FBI named the top 14 trafficking cities. So yes, we always hear Atlanta's number one. Now, Atlanta at the time also had the most active FBI task force. It's led by a good friend of mine. So yes, we had the most human trafficking cases because we were looking for it. During that, when we were making all these cases here, I went and taught law enforcement down in Tampa. And basically, when I started, they said, we don't have human trafficking here. And then we did the training. And then their lieutenant in charge of crimes against children said, I can think of 5 cases that are on my desk right now that are trafficking. I just didn't realize that's what it was. It looked like maybe a stat rape case in a hotel or a kid that kept running away, maybe kids and drugs in a hotel room, not recognizing what was happening. But the same thing happens now rurally. If you go and do a training in some very rural part of Georgia, almost every single time I've done that, within a week, they encounter a case that they now realize that was trafficking. I just didn't, basically, kids, it's how it started here. There was a juvenile court judge who started realizing, wait, there's all these girls being brought in here with prostitution arrests into juvenile court and no corresponding adults being charged. So a lot of it has to do with training. A lot of it has to do with groups like the churches here, Street Grace, people being willing to say trafficking is a problem. You know where trafficking no longer looks like it's a problem? City of Atlanta. Because they've gotten rid of their vice squad. They don't want trafficking to be known for trafficking to be a problem. DeKalb feels very differently. DeKalb recently had 10 times the number of cases, trafficking cases, as the city, as Atlanta. That is not because there's more trafficking in DeKalb. We all know this. You have to make an effort. It's why some of the work that Chris Carr's office is doing and the governor's office and GBI is doing, now that they have these big units, they're not a one-person unit, they're making so many more cases, not because trafficking is rising here in Georgia, but they're really focusing on proactively finding it, because most people who are being trafficked think what's happening is their fault and they'll get in trouble if they cry out, so they stay quiet. Okay, it is 10. I know he raised his hand like first-ish, and then I think I need to turn it over. Oh, one more. Okay, I'll do real fast because you've got, I don't want to take your time.
Right here.
Yes. This. Okay.
I'm making the assumption here, okay? Even if you find traffickers and are taking and arrested and so forth and so on, based upon what we hear in the law enforcement across the United States, it's extremely difficult to get a jury decision for the actual prosecution and perhaps jail time. Okay, that's an assumption. This intercepting program by the Microsoft, mm-hmm. It would seem that you'd have proof beyond a doubt through the technology of voice analysis and other means to have a proof that that person is guilty. If that's so, will the legislature maybe use that and say it's an automatic 10-year term in prison or something like that?
So if you traffic a child in Georgia, we usually take things state instead of federal because our laws are so strong. It's probably going to be 25 years if they think you're purchasing a child. If it's an adult, it is that 10 years. Automatic penalties are really, really hard. But yes, it's very strong evidence and you're going to get a lot of plea deals. All right. Sir, can you – or do you want to go to her? Can I – he was first. I keep missing you. Yes, this man is right in the middle table. He was first.
Here we go.
Ma'am, you want to come up? All right.
You know, to kind of follow up on what this gentleman pointed out,
You know, there seems to be a normalization process going in social media where some of this stuff is treated as not important. More recently, the pedophile community, what a word, but they wanted to be called minor attracted persons as opposed to pedophiles.
Yes.
And you never hear anything negative about that. There's a moment of negativity from conservatives and so forth. But, you know, it seems like you're working against the government and the government's failure to really achieve anything. If I say I'm a Trump advocate on the online, I could be canceled in 5 seconds because some bot or some technology thing grabbed that and shut it down. Why can't that be done, as this gentleman except? Why can't the government step in and take some step about pornography? Everybody screams free speech, but pornography is like not as about as tantamount as going into a theater and yelling fire. Why don't they just shut the damn thing down?
So we are, I will say, we are seeing minor wins. Yes, that's a huge issue. And it really is culturally just this normalization. Part of it is people who are afraid to talk about it instead of people who are speaking up. But we have seen in two states where they have basically put the burden on the company at least to protect children from pornography, which ends up almost shutting it down for every. There's like, okay, I don't want to operate in this state. And so companies are actually just not showing their stuff, trying to block out a whole state. Louisiana was the first one. We're looking at that type of legislation in several of the states we're operating in. So there's almost like this little, it's the business side. Hey, if there's this going to be this huge penalty if a kid accidentally gets on your site, you might just choose not to operate in that state. And that's one of the things that is happening. But culturally, it is such a problem. And kids, even more than anyone, are normalizing what they see on social media. There's a reason I can see this little game going on. Because we're not telling them that is not how the world works. Okay, I think you've got to.
Thank you,
Kamala. Thank you for bringing this clear picture to us of the circumstances you and your group are fighting. Thanks so much.
You. Okay. Oh, thanks, Tom. And I have my. Do I still have 10 minutes or 5 minutes?
10 minutes.
10. Okay. All right. Where's the map of Puerto Rico? Okay. So my name is Cora Carter, and I spoke here last April. Thank you for that opportunity. And thank you again for giving me 10 minutes of your time today. But last August till September, I was back to the Philippines to visit our farmers. And because of COVID, we lost 3 years of visit over there. We started in 2014. But thankfully, when we returned, they were still alive and kicking and doing agriculture. So what we do basically is we teach the gospel using agriculture. When they see us and when they see them, we have different perspective. We look at them as very, very poor, very poor. It's hard to imagine, like a six little house like this for a family and not eating enough. Hard to believe because they live in the rural area, right? But and then they look at us as very wealthy. Look, the white people have a lot of money. They're going to help us. But we don't go there as the solution of their problem materially, like give them money to buy these things. But we train them how to produce and how to solve their own problems. And we bring the message the same, that we are all broken people, that we need reconciliation back to God through Jesus Christ alone. And after that, we are reconciled with ourselves, our identity, with others. And lastly, that God has given them a lot of assets to be able to produce. It's just around them. Look around you. And we have a big session on what are your assets. And we are here to help you learn what we can teach you with using natural farming so that they could make their own inputs. And then we also tell them, we want to learn from you. So today, we have in Mindanao, Palawan, lots of areas there we have our farmers. and you're going to meet some of them. But first, next slide. Oh, the books that you have shipped. Give an applause to the harvesters for sending the money and the books. I tell you, four boxes were packed by Tom and Perry, not to embarrass Perry and Debbie, but they're so heavy that I cannot imagine until today how Perry loaded 6 boxes. One box could be over 200 pounds of books. So thank you, harvesters. They're very happy, the school. Next. As if Debbie was not contented with just shipping boxes of books, she came along. So that's Debbie. Debbie, raise your hands, please. And she gave training to the schools that we have adopted because we teach agriculture in schools too. Okay, and so one school, we expected to teach only 6 teachers because they're in the rural area. Guess what? On the right, Debbie ended up teaching 88 teachers from grade 1, 2, 3, kindergarten, right, Debbie? And they're asking for the grades 4, 5, and 6. Not only that, the school superintendent herself came and made it not just a local event of a little tiny school, but entire municipality. And the DepEd officers of the entire province, like the entire state of Georgia, to give a picture of that, also came, 2 of them. So that's what happened. Little thing we give to the Lord, He makes it big all the time. Next. So the red one is in Palawan Island. After Debbie left me by myself, I went to the Palawan Island, and you see that? Quite separate from the Philippines. And I have 5 minutes. And then that Palawan Island, the entire island, we have presence. We have farmers already there. We started in 2014 in the entire Philippines. We lost 3 years, as I said. But 7 years, God has done a lot. And so, next. This is how we traveled. We rented a car from the city because sometimes we have to get to the municipalities or the tribal areas. But then when we get there, we drive 4 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours. Then we have to be willing to do anything to reach the hinterland. So one is this one. What do you call that here? Have you seen one like this in Georgia? No? And that's on the South Palawan. I had 3 young men traveling with me, North Palawan, 2 other ladies and only 1 man. So it depends who among our coordinators could go with me all the time. The second picture, we walk for 2 hours. I didn't even notice because I was talking all the time. No, mainly listening. So it was raining mainly, so you can imagine the mud and all that stuff and crossing rivers. We crossed several of these, by the way. It looked like it's not dangerous. To me, it was. Because rocks, big rocks below, and the current, truly, was difficult. And I was doing it the wrong way. I was going against the current. They have to tell me, no, go with the current. But if I go, I'll end up over there. So I was afraid. Okay, next. So meet our farmers for 5 minutes. Hello. All right. I begin on there. That's 2 hours of walk. And those are our model farmers. There's a church over there up in the mountains. And Pastor Jury already is a star seed-saving pastor because they learned seed-saving early this year. And so we walk, arrive at night, and ate wild boar, and then had a meeting the next day. So that's wonderful. And this one is an experimental garden. That's his house. That's how small the houses are. And this is one of our farmers. That's how he carries his produce from the mountains home. Mm. Next slide. So entirely from the human trafficking this morning. Then, that one, those ladies are so wonderful. They have this cute little church, a nice view. And then they said, Mom Cora, we learn how to grow our vegetables and are eating vegetables now. Only the other people, the local people, are doing that. But now as a tribe, because they're from Tagbanwa group, the first group was Palawanos, we deal with tribal people, indigenous people. And so now they're growing gardens in front of their yard. They don't have to go far to get food. And then the second one below, it's the most exciting. These are the young people who came to our training. And they said, you know what happened? Our people there at the top of the mountains, we decided not to go. It was too much. So they came down and met us halfway. We also climb, but they came down, and so we met. And then they said, the people were wondering where the vegetables came from because there was no garden vegetables in the top of the mountain, on the top of the mountain. And then all of a sudden, these young people growing vegetables, and they have already discipled some young people to come to our training because they also want to learn. So that was a very exciting farmers forum here. And then Alex and Joy, they're from the north. We have to solve them, help them solve their problems. They have snail, Japanese snail problem. Someone dropped bags of Japanese in their land. And then we have to help them with water problems because they carry buckets, believe it or not. They have to carry these buckets from the water source up, and we're helping them with those problems too. All right, next. I have 1 minute and 15 seconds. So I'm trying to get invited again next year by not taking too much time. All right, so this is in the Manobo tribe. So we have done the Tagbanwa, the Palawanos, all the Batak tribes in Palawan. Now that's in Mindanao. There were New People's Army. These pastors, by the way, were part of the New People's Army, fight against the government. And then they came down to settle. They're just so happy to learn agriculture. These are pastors now. We started with 3 planted churches. Now there are 8 of them. And they're using agriculture to plant churches there now. So they were very happy because last August I told them, we are not coming here as a team anymore, but I'll visit you, or Tom and I will visit you, because they will be the ones to do the training in the locality, in the next area. And I told them the entire Mindanao. And they were very excited. And then this is a new seed that we have introduced for everyone to eat, and they like it. They were able to grow it. All right? That's my alarm. Next, that's the Opo. And then the next, that's in the tourist area. Thank you. Oh.
Many years ago, I my first heard about.
Thank you, Jeff, and everyone. Oh, we have, what's the name of this?
Check on them.
Yes. Flyers. I have 20 only, limited supply. And I have our current newsletter, 10 of them. So please come and ask, because I don't want to just give them to you.
Cora, would you close us out with a prayer? And thank you for being here with us this morning.
Okay.
And we'll be dismissed.
Father, thank you because we could glorify you today, just learning a lot about the problem going on with sexual trafficking or human trafficking. And thank you for the ministry that you have enabled us to do in the Philippines. Lord, thank you for Harvesters for being supportive of all this to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. In Jesus' name, amen.